Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Today on the show, we're talking about fertility, not as a moment in time, but as a whole body, whole life journey. Joining us is Rachel Swanson, one of the country's most sought after nutritionists and the author of Trying, a science-based guide to optimizing fertility through food, mindset, and environment.
Rachel reframes the fertility conversation away from perfection and toward sustainable, meaningful change, training your body for pregnancy as the chief energy officer of your own health. Rachel offers practical, empowering strategies that support hormones, egg quality, and overall well-being, whether you're trying now or planning ahead. Rachel Swanson, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's fabulous to be here with you ladies. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. And as we were talking about in the green room, it's been a while since Mary Beth and I have been worried about our own fertility. So this will be a really great conversation. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there maybe waiting for their first grandkids who might be tuning into a conversation like this. So there's really something there for everyone. Can we start by talking about the issue with fertility? We hear this, you know, that there, I don't know if it's in addition to people are having children later and that creates fertility issues, to all the other things going on in our environment. What is going on?
Yeah, look, it's really common fact that we are having children later in life. So of course that is going to be sort of part of this equation, if you will. However, what we're not really discussing about as often as I like it to be discussed is all of the modifiable factors within our control. I'll just give you one example of this. So our metabolic health, that's not really being talked about whatsoever in context of optimizing our body for fertility. And yet this is a huge biological hurdle for both men and women to getting pregnant. So again, age, of course, chronological age, like we can't deny this, but you know, I think of more biological aging, if you will, where like, let's say, let's pull on these strings for diet, lifestyle, environment. Let's do all the things that's going to prime our body and set ourselves up for success. And you know, something I found so interesting with what you were saying beforehand is how you both haven't really thought about your fertility. Now you're thinking about other people's fertility in your family. But I was just thinking in my head, and this is kind of the core essence of the book as well. What's amazing and what the approach that I took to this book, because it's a root cause based approach, a lot of the topics in the book are applicable to other things too, no matter what life stage you are or whether you're actually even interested in fertility or not. And so I'm sure your listeners right now, yes, they're probably interested in fertility, but I do want to let people know that this has so much more relevance outside this topic, which is fabulous.
Absolutely. Well, you call your approach fertility 2.0. What was 1.0 and why do we need 2.0?
I love it. So I would say fertility 1.0 is pretty much summarizes the following. It's reactive, it's based off of symptoms, and it's one size fits all. I call that fertility 1.0, right? The advice provided to women. Fertility 2.0, by the way, I should probably go back and say, if it wasn't immediately obvious, I find this approach completely prehistoric, right? I mean, it doesn't reflect the latest science. Quite frankly, women deserve so much better, in my opinion. So that's why over the past 3 years, I kind of developed and coined the term fertility 2.0, which basically just means it's a proactive approach that optimizes how the entire body functions.
Well, you mentioned a moment ago that metabolic health is a critical part of fertility. And when you say that, do you mean like one's BMI or cellular energy production? What kinds of things are we talking about with metabolic health?
a lot of people kind of throw out that term, I'm kind of finding nowadays, or at least maybe on social media, I'm just finding this out. But everyone is kind of talking about the same thing. So you might have, to set the stage, you might have heard about it being talked about in the context of, you know, mitochondrial health, which are the little organelles within our cell that generate ATP, which is energy, right? So that is sort of the unit that we're talking about when we're referring to the flow of energy within our systems. For this discussion, we'll kind of take a step back and talk about it more in the context of, yes, like you said, one indicator of our metabolic health certainly is our BMI, and more specifically, our waist circumference. So we know that essentially waist circumference is a proxy of visceral fat that is more metabolically harmful, and that's associated with fertility outcomes, also pregnancy outcomes. And so, yes, that is one factor that we can use. You can also look at your triglycerides, your HDL cholesterol, your blood pressure, and your fasting glucose. Now, most basic you can get, and this isn't even, Mary Beth, this isn't even the best measure of metabolic health, but this is something everyone can use, right? These are just little data points. That's like, how is our body functioning? So a more, I would say, a better way to go about understanding metabolic health is actually based off of insulin. So that's a hormone, right, that helps facilitate the uptake of basically energy from our bloodstream, which is blood sugar, into our cells, right? That level is going to show us, like, how is just our body operating, right? How is the energy flowing through our systems, and can this be optimized or not?
And we were talking with another guest recently, Dr. Josh Redd, about inflammation and how some of these same exact metrics are good indicators of how much inflammation your body is experiencing. Is that something that also just generally affects fertility?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, and thank you for bringing that up. And so luckily, we already had the stage set for us with your other guests for inflammation. But yes, it all boils down to, think of metabolic health as just a lever within your control that can influence inflammation in your body, right? It really comes down to that. All of this increases or decreases our chances of conception. That's why you would hear every single doctor, every single OBGYN, reproductive endocrinologist, everyone knows, you know, everyone says unanimously, inflammation is important. We all need to lower inflammation. It's optimizing your metabolic health to decrease inflammation and working on other systems that can decrease inflammation in your body. Otherwise, it's so nebulous, right? You probably heard like 20,000 pieces of advice about inflammation this, inflammation that.
Well, it is all about overall health for all of us, and so it's good. You know, what makes a fertile woman makes the rest of us healthy as well. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with Rachel Swanson. She's one of America's most sought-after nutritionists. She's the author of a book called Trying, A Science-Backed Plan to Optimize Your Fertility. It's just come out. I love how you say that we need to be the chief energy officer of our own body, the CEO. And you say it's not about perfection, and it's more about this whole body approach.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were just discussing metabolic health, right? For some people, that's going to be a huge leverage point within their control, which is fabulous. For other people, though, they might be kind of metabolically healthy, if you will, but maybe their microbiome health is very, very, let's say, off. We call that dysbiosis. But if you have these ecosystems which influence our immune system regulation and inflammation levels in our body, then guess what? That's going to be a lever that someone else can pull. So when I say sort of this chief energy officer of your body, it's actually figuring out for each person, where is the leverage point, right? And for everyone, that should be different. If it wasn't, then that means, again, we're going back to fertility 1.0, which is a one size fits all, everyone do one thing. No, I mean, even in the book, it's almost like a, choose your own adventure. If we need help on the microbiome health, go to that chapter. If we want to look more at metabolic health, dive into that chapter. So I want people to start thinking about that. And why do I think this is so important? Because unfortunately, you know, people are looking, say, to social media now for diet advice, health advice, all of this. Like, it shouldn't matter what Sally is doing, because it should be about, you know, you looking internally. What are your signs? What are your symptoms? You know, that's what personalized medicine, personalized nutrition is all about anyway.
As you're talking about microbiome, you have one, you call it the team sport tip. So this would include the male. And I'd love for you to go into it a little bit more, what men can do to improve overall fertility. But there's something that you talk about, kissing hygiene affecting your microbiome. What is that?
Yeah, you know, everyone loves this one. And look, I'm here for it. I'm all for it. And it's perhaps because it's kind of a new fact that no one really knows. But just to take a step back. So microbiome in the book and for fertility, I talk about these like three column reproductive relevant ecosystems that we have the opportunities to support in our favor. So we have gut microbiome, vaginal microbiome, oral microbiome. So this is very much a team sport, because to answer your question, for oral health, essentially, if say, let's say a woman is doing all the right things, you know, she's keeping up on her dental visits, she is doing all the brushing and flossing, right? All the good things, but her partner is not. So this is to say there is microbial transfer, so to speak. This has been shown. So we can't just have one partner doing all the work, whereas the other partner, you know, kind of getting away with doing next to nothing, so to speak. So that is, by the way, the overarching theme of the book. We're talking about the oral microbiome, because what happens in the mouth doesn't stay in the mouth. It can, you know, influence distant organ sites. That includes our ovaries. And it can include immune activation, right? Again, can influence inflammation levels in our body. But the overarching theme is, whether it's metabolic health, whether it's microbiome health, environmental chemicals, this is very much a team sport. And, you know, we need to start talking about it that way, because the too much emphasis, I think, is still being placed on the woman when she's preparing her body for pregnancy.
You're making me think of years ago when I had a friend from high school visiting with her husband, and they were trying to have a baby. And so they weren't drinking at all, because at that time, I think it's still a recommended guideline. And her husband was very pouty about the whole thing, was saying, if I keep not being able to have an occasional beer, there ain't gonna be no baby anyway. It's just so funny. Perhaps that's still part of the guidance, but what are some of the other things that we should perhaps draw back from, or make sure to try to include in our diet, in the things we ingest or experience, in order to maximize our fertility?
Well, I think, you know, the environment, to answer the question kind of and just give you the straight facts, the environmental chemicals category, I think, is probably one of the best for kind of quick and easy tips for both partners to either remove, right, or put in to their day-to-day routine, and that includes the men. So here's one. You tell me if your other guests have talked about this, okay? For example, the use of Teflon pans, the non-stick coating pans, still a lot of people use these, and it's been shown very recently, just the past 2 years, in a multi-site study, which again, in research, we love those type of studies because it means the outcome is repeated, right, across sites of, across locations, rather. And it shows that essentially it damages sperm, and that association was very, very clear. So like, that's just kind of like a one easy, simple takeaway that everyone can optimize. And look, we don't even have to cross the bridge when it comes to alcohol, even though I'm happy to talk about it. But little things like this, right? Teflon nonstick pans, taking those out, easy.
I love it. Well, the interesting thing about Teflon is it's seriously has the whole canary in a coal mine thing, that if you have birds in your house that are pets, you're not supposed to cook on Teflon because the fumes can kill the bird. I'm like, does that tell us anything? And they've known this for 20 years. So I personally thought, let's return to our cast iron and some of the classics that get the job done.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm like reading all these studies, you know, for years, and you're preparing for the book. I'm like, even for me, I'm like, wow, okay, this definitely needs to be changed in the household ASAP, right?
Yeah, right. Well, what are some of the kinds of positive changes one could expect, man or woman, if they really commit to an optimal fertility regimen?
Yeah, so, well, let me tell you this. If, let's say, if a man chooses to have, you know, a sperm sample and he makes all of diet lifestyle changes, he can actually repeat that and, you know, find a difference. This is shown again and again. And even, you know, it's crazy. These companies, these like companies that allow you to sort of mail in a sample and back, they have all of this data like aggregated. It's fascinating how much changes can really make a difference. Now, by all means, I do not mean every man has to do this, but if someone is listening in and they're kind of skeptical, like, is this really going to make a difference? Like, no, you can actually, again, prove it to yourself. Don't listen to my advice. Use yourself as a N equals one experiment and show the before and after. Sometimes I do this for clients just with environmental chemicals. It's like, if someone's skeptical or they just want information or they're like data-driven, right? These type of people, I can easily test them before and after, and they can see the differences of the lifestyle changes. So again, that's for people who love data, who might be skeptical of the changes. However, I think the most important point here is you never have to do that further analysis or, you know, pay for expensive test kits in order to make changes, of course, right? So that's on one side. And again, all of the 400 studies, 400 plus studies in the book, all are human studies that show little things of diet, lifestyle, environment will make a difference and will improve, you know, sperm quality, egg quality, odds of conceiving, experience of smoother pregnancy, right? All of this is proven. And that's why I'm just so excited to share it, because we didn't think, a lot of doctors are still skeptical. Like, does this really move the needle? Does this really help with outcomes? You bet it does.
Yeah. Wow. This is all so interesting. Just so our listeners can know, if they're, you know, maybe they're just starting to enter into this world, like you're talking about, is it pretty common for men to get a sperm sample tested to see what they're up against? And should they do that?
Now it's becoming more commonplace. I think before, to be honest, I actually think even a few years ago, it was kind of like, a man would go into a urologist only if there was a recurrent pregnancy loss, right? If you were dealing with pretty devastating conditions that were a roadblock to getting pregnant. Now it's starting to become more generally accepted. Again, why all you see all this kind of explosion of these direct-to-consumer companies, which is amazing because it doesn't even require a visit, right, to the urologist for the men. I absolutely think that if you're in a optimization mindset, Lynn, why not, right? Mm-hmm. I think, again, the women are doing all of this thing. They're going to their OBGYN, they're going to their fertility doctor or reproductive endocrinologist and doing this massive workup, but the man is doing nothing. This is kind of wild in my opinion. So why not get a baseline analysis to kind of see where you're at? If you don't want to do that, then again, take all of sort of the chapters in the book, implement the changes, and, you know, you can guarantee you're going to have a healthier body after. And that includes, you know, sperm production, of course, you know, granted, if there is no sort of anatomical anomalies that would otherwise prevent that. But it's worth it. And going a step further, I think it's worth it for all men to have one visit to a fertility-friendly urologist just to see how things are doing and have that talk. You know, I speak with a lot of these like fertility-friendly urologists, if you will, and oftentimes they, just through their simple intake, they're picking up on things for the first time in a man's life about their entire health. I mean, this is really important. This goes way outside of fertility. And, you know, this impacts big things in their life. If they're at risk of cardiovascular disease at such an early age, like, that's not okay. So again, they can actually pick up these signals, which is amazing.
We're speaking with Rachel Swanson about her new book called Trying. Okay, Rachel, as you're talking, it's just opening up this Pandora's box of questions for me. But, you know, so much of our decision these days, especially with young people, are social media driven. And it's made me wonder, you know, how there's been this big trend of freezing eggs among women. When would you advise that? And when, how much of it do you think is driven by social media and people thinking that they need to do these things that they may or may not need to? And, you know, part of that question also has to do, you know, goes back to a sperm sample analysis. Are there so many more endocrine disruptors in our environment today that all this is very prescient?
Yeah. So going back to social media and all these questions, I mean, these are kind of so many questions we can dive deep into, but I'll try to hit all of them. So with social media, yes, what I kind of see is, you know, women are always made to feel like they're behind all the time, right? So it's like, if you're 20, if you're 25, if you're 30, 35, 40, like 40, at every point in life, you know, you go on social media and it's like, you should have been freezing your eggs 10 years ago, 5 years ago. You know, aging is kind of ultimate fate. I just hate the conversation, by the way, around, I'm pro science, right? I'm pro all of this, but I just kind of hate how the conversation has become so epically disempowering to women. It's like, we can't do anything. We're doing all this scientific advancement, freezing our eggs, yet we're not doing the first thing to actually optimize how our body works, you know, in the first place. This is very ironic to me. So look, I think it would be so wrong for me to sit here and say, you know, if a woman isn't planning on getting pregnant in the near future, but she desires to have a family, even though family, that can look many different ways, it would be morally irresponsible of me to say, like, she shouldn't at least have one conversation with a doctor about all of her options, because the last thing I want is her looking back with regret because maybe she didn't find the right partner in her life at the right time. And gosh, I mean, think about just the heartbreak she would have if she wanted to build a family and she was unable to do so, say, because of her age, right? And she was, or just unhealthy to carry a pregnancy. So that's that. And again, putting that aside, though, I think we need to really stop looking just to social media to get this health advice. Again, this is going back to our own signs, symptoms, our goals, personalization, N equals one. Like, use yourself as an experiment to implement these different interventions, and you can see if they work or not. You can always go based off of how you feel or how things are changing in your body. Now, to your other point, it's like, we can look at all of the modifiable factors within our control and pick and choose based off of, you know, what we need to do versus not. That's why I really distilled it down into things that really move the needle versus all the noise on social media, right? I'll stop here because I know we can go in 100 different paths, but I'll let you dictate the direction you want to take.
Well, that is very true. On another side of the issue, you bring up how important sleep is to our fertility. What kinds of advice can you offer, you know, that maybe we haven't heard before about just general sleep hygiene or elements about sleep that affect fertility?
Yeah, you know, I think, so let's, I'll try to actually speak to the male first, just because again, he's not talked about enough for fertility. I would say, a lot of males, you know, they care about their testosterone level, right? And of course, testosterone is needed for fertility and just good reproductive function in general. If the fastest way to tank testosterone, Mary Beth, is literally sleep deprive yourself, right? Not getting a good enough sleep. Like, we forget how critical this is. It's kind of overlooked. Look, sleep is not sexy to talk about. It's like, you know, your eyes kind of like glaze over. You stop listening when you hear about sleep. But it's like, people care about testosterone. So, but that actually, you know, it's not about taking a supplement. It's actually about making sure, well, I don't know, is this man getting over, you know, 4 to 5 hours of sleep, or is he staying up all night, you know, working, playing video games, social media, whatever it is. So that's like the hormone piece. Then I think about everything we just talked about a little bit earlier, right? Which is metabolic function, insulin sensitivity, glucose regulation. Again, you can be doing all the things with diet, but guess what? If you aren't sleeping good, or there's problems with your sleep, you have sleep apnea, again, you just aren't prioritizing it, right? There's no way to interfere with that system faster. Like, again, I could eat a perfect diet, and if I am sleep deprived the next day, if I wear a continuous glucose monitor right on the back of my arm so I can see my glucose data in real time, guaranteed that is really going to be deranged the next day compared to if I slept, you know, 7-8 hours, if you will. So again, we're talking now metabolic function and sleep. So I could go on and on, but I think you kind of get the gist of where I'm going. It's like it's the best performance indicator. It's like the easiest thing we can really prioritize. But I mean, hey, it's nice for me to say it's a lot harder to implement, isn't it?
It can be. We've been speaking with Rachel Swanson, author of Trying, a Science-Backed Plan to Optimize Your Fertility. Rachel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's been fabulous. I could go on for a few more hours, but okay, we'll stop here. I appreciate
you both. I wish we could. We could as well.
Thank you, Rachel.